There is a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah that Rashi quotes in one on this week's parsha, which has always struck me as interesting. The pasuk says, "Hineni mashchisa esa aretz." We spoke about a little in Targum Mashir about the phrase "esa aretz." The Medrash says, "Rav Huna v'Rabbi Yirmiyah b'shem Rav Kahana bar Malkiya afilu gimul tfachim shanachresha sholetes ba'aretz nimochu." The word "esa aretz" means "with the earth." I am going to destroy them along with the earth. What do you mean? God didn't destroy the earth. The answer is the top three tfachim in which the machresha, where they would plant their food, where the plow cuts into, nimochu, was wiped away as well. Why? Mashal leben malachim shehayelo pedagog. You had a prince who had a tutor, a pedagog. Kolzman shehay sareya haya pedagog shalonirda. When the prince rebels, so the pedagog gets punished because they hold him responsible for the behavior of the prince. He's supposed to train the prince. Uleben malachim, or like a child, a prince shehayelo miniko. He had a nursemaid. Kolzman shu sareya haya sameinikto nirdes. If he misbehaves, they punish the nursemaid. They blame her because she's supposed to be teaching him to behave properly. Kach amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hineni mashchisa esa aretz. I'm going to destroy them along with the earth, because where did mankind come from? Where did humankind come from? Afar min ha'adamah. So God is going to punish not only the people, but going to punish the meinekes, the pedagogue. So what exactly is the point of this medrash? There's a Gemara in Shabbos. It tells a story about Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, the great Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who was greater than all of his contemporaries. The Gemara there says, Rabbi Chelbo tells us that a certain kind of wine and certain hot springs of the Moses destroyed the Aseres HaShvatim, meaning when they were exiled, they went to this place, which was a spa. Because why did it destroy them? Because they didn't want to come back. They liked it so much there. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach ikla lahasam. He visited there. Imshach Basrai. He was sort of drawn after it. It was so appealing to him. He stayed there. He Aker Talmudei. He forgot everything that he learned. Kihadar Asa, one day he came back to visit his colleagues. Kam leMikrei B'Sifra. He got up to read in the Sefer Torah. And boy in the Mikrei, HaChodesh HaZelachem. He was supposed to read Parshas Bo. HaChodesh HaZelachem. Amar, instead of reading HaChodesh HaZelachem, HaChereish HaYalibam. You can see how he misread the letters. He had gone away to a different place, figuring the yeshiva would follow him, and he forgot it. Nobody did. And he forgot everything he learned. He read HaChereish HaYalibam. Their heart was deaf. Ba'u Ra Banan Rachme Alei. The sages muspala for him. V'hadar Tamudeh. And his knowledge came back. He re-remembered. V'hainu ditznan, Rabbi Nehorai Omer, and Rabbi Nehorai is assumed to be Relezim and Arach, have a gola l'makom Torah, v'al tomar shi tavo acharecha, shechaverecha yikaimu b'yadcha, v'al binascha al tishayin. Don't say that the Torah is going to follow you. It'll stay with you. Your chaverim, your being around other people studying Torah, is what's mekayim your Torah. Don't think that you're smart enough that you can go somewhere else. You'll continue to be the person who you are. The point of the story, and I think that the point of the Medrash, is that we often underestimate the impact of the environment. Environment has enormous impact upon the choices that we make. What people are doing around us shapes the way we behave, shapes the way we think, shapes what we think is normal. When the Ribbono Shalom decided that he had to destroy the world because human beings were so corrupt, it wasn't enough to destroy the human beings. He had to destroy the environment that had created them and fostered them. The three tochim, where everything, all their food, all their sustenance was taken from, that had to be wiped away as well. Because if they were corrupt, it meant that it was because there was a corrupt environment which fostered or pushed that process along. Rashi quotes another famous medrash at the beginning of the parsha. Noach, Ela told us Noach, ish tzadik tamim haya b'dorosav. Tamim haya b'dorosav. And there were two opinions. One opinion says, b'dorosav he was a tzadik. But had he been in a door like Avram Avinu, he wouldn't have been such a tzadik. And the other opinion is that no, Bedoro Savi was a tzaddik, surrounded by corrupt people. Kavachomer, he'd been Avraham Avinu's dori, would have been a tzaddik. I would suggest to you, Alderach Adrush, that these two opinions don't fundamentally differ in their point from one another. The first opinion in the Medrash is Noach would not have held a candle to Avraham because he lived in his generation. And as much as Noach was a tzaddik, when he was surrounded by people who were so corrupt, so thoroughly immoral and degenerate, so that could not rub off. It had to rub off on Noach somewhat. So if you compare Noach and his generation to Avraham Avinu, so Noach didn't compare to Avraham Avinu. And the second Daya doesn't deny that point, that says Noach managed to still be a tzaddik in his generation. Imagine him be surrounded with people like Avraham Avinu in a generation where the people around him were so much better than the people of Dor HaMabul. Think about how much better Noach would have been. Because the environment that we put ourselves in has a huge impact. The Gemara in Brachos, in fifth parak, has a very powerful agada that Moshe Rabbeinu basically was hitiach varim klapei mala. He responded harshly to God. He blamed God for the maaseh ha'ego. He said, v'ti zahav. Moshe Rabbeinu says, the quotes of the pasuk is from, I think, Hosea, v'chesef herbeis ilan zahav asu labal. Moshe Rabbeinu blamed the Ribbono Shel Olam, maaseh ha'ego. He said, you gave him all this gold. What do you think was going to happen? You showered them with all this wealth. What do you think was going to happen? And he quotes a famous mashal. He says, mashal la'adam achad shehayel obein. He had a son. Hirchitzo v'sacho v'achilo v'shkehu. He made sure he was bathed, perfumed. He was not. He was sated. He'd eaten. He'd drunk. V'tala lo kisal tzavar. And he hangs a purse around his neck. V'oshivo al pesach shel zonos. And he puts him in front of a house of prostitution. Of zonos. Mayase osabein shel lo yechta. What do you think is going to happen? You put someone in that environment, of course they're going to do an Avera. It'd be amazing if they didn't. Every one of us has struggles and challenges. And for most of us, if you put us in a particular circumstance, a lot of the time, we're going to struggle and we're even going to fail. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean that in those circumstances, it's okay to fail. But we are human beings. But the trick is not in the heat of the moment, not in what some of the psychologists describe a state of arousal, but at an earlier stage, the trick is to set up your circumstances, or to do everything you can to set up your circumstances that you're putting yourself in the correct environment. You put yourself in a situation to succeed. Right? If you want to go on a diet, but what you don't do is fill your pantry with junk food and say, but I'm really going to change who I am. So you know what? I'm going to fill the pantry with junk food and I'm going to overcome the temptation. Because you know what's going to happen there. The trick is, you take all the junk food in the pantry and you throw it out. So then, when I get hungry, because I'm tired at the end of the day, I come home and I want some food, well, yes, I could go to the store and buy some Oreos. But at the end, they've made their reappearance this year. But, nonetheless, it's harder for me to do that. It's one step. That's harder to do. So if you set up your environment, or choose your environment in the first place, you either set yourself up for success or set yourself up for failure. When people choose to be in a yeshiva, as all of you have chosen, so you have in effect chosen an environment that is in many ways conducive to growth in Torah and Yiras Shamayim. That's what a yeshiva is supposed to be about. Imagine somebody who finds this beautiful, pristine place in the middle of the mountains, and he drives up there in his car, parks the car, he looks around, he's resting, it's beautiful, this is an incredible environment. And you would say that's wonderful for him. But what would you think about the person who goes and he drives up there to this beautiful, pristine environment, leaves his car running, and sits with his mouth right next to the tailpipe? You think the person is a meshugana. Right? You've gone out there to this beautiful environment, this healthy, pristine, natural environment, and then you sit there inhaling the smoke out of the tailpipe. That would clearly be crazy. We live in a world with a lot of challenges. And one of the biggest challenges, I might call it, is the cultural pollution that comes in from the outside world. I don't live in a ghetto. I don't try to live in a ghetto. I don't try to build ghetto walls. Our interaction with the broader world brings positives and it brings negatives. we are often not aware of many of the negatives that it brings. Years ago, I gave a Sichas Musar in the Beis Medrash when I spoke about technology and its impact, and I wasn't even thinking at all about culture. I don't know if there were smartphones yet, but maybe it was just when they were coming in, and people literally became avodim. You know, I said, Ra'isi avodim al susim b'sarim halchim kavadim al ha'aretz. That the Pasuk in Kohala says that Shlomo Mel says, I've seen slaves riding on the horses as if they're the nobility, and the sarim are walking on the ground, either leading the horses or they don't have on the horses. And I said at the time, that's what technology can become. Technology is meant to be slaves to human beings. It's to allow us to do things better, to do things more efficiently, to do things that we don't then have to do, so we have more time to do the things that we want to do and should do. But what has actually happened, and I don't think I understood at the time, I don't know if anybody understood at the time, how much money was being invested by technology companies in the best psychology in the world, how to make us slaves to the technology. I think you all know exactly what I'm talking about, if not from personal experience, although you probably do, from reading the news. But we have a choice. We're not actually slaves. We're not actually slaves. And not just in terms of the technology grabbing us, but in terms of what the messages the technology is sending us, right? The phone itself is a neutral device. It's not it has no moral standing other than it's a distraction. But the content that we choose to let into our lives, and that's a choice, that content has a huge impact upon us. It used to be your environment, so you went to a yeshiva. That's all there was. Because, I mean, maybe there was a payphone once there were phones, but basically you were in the environment of the yeshiva. But came along more technology, and it turns out you can go to yeshiva, but it's not clear which environment you're actually in. But we have a choice. We have a choice whether to make our environment one of Torah, or whether to allow that environment to be the one of foreign culture. And it's not that we shouldn't be aware of what's going on in the world, but the more you read and the more you read it constantly, the more you start to think that that's normal and that that's appropriate. That becomes your environment. The more Torah you study, the more that becomes your environment. I say this with one plea or request. I've done this in the past. COVID has kind of interrupted this, and I don't serve as a police state. I ask in the Beis Medrash, when possible, and in Shir, well, half of it is certainly possible, I ask you not to use your phones. I have a plastic box, some of you may have noticed, sitting next to my shtender, and that's the cell phone box. I'm not going to come around and ask you to put it in. You know, sometimes Josh would take it around and, you know, like the guy collecting. Certainly that's not a problem of someone begging. You can give your phone, not give your phone. I don't care whether you put it in the box or not, but I think I would ask you that you put it away during Shir, during Seder, because it is a distraction. I think everybody understands I have the same temptations as everybody else. That's why I take my phone and I usually toss it in the box. And if I'm expecting a very important call, so maybe that's different. But Derech Klal, I do that because I understand that when the phone is on me, that's a temptation. You know, I've just gotten through a tosis. Okay, now I'll go check that. And I will ask you a second thing, which is harder because I know sometimes people use it learning computers as well. Sometimes you don't have a safer, sometimes the stuff that you need. I'm a little more understanding there, but I ask you to think about that as well. Because, once again, you can sit on your computer in Shir or in Seder. Ironically, in Shir, if you sit in the back, it's easier because no one sees your screen. In the Beis Medrash, somebody might see your screen, so maybe you don't want to be, you know, reading, you know, watching the replays of the Giants or whatever else. But I would ask you also to consider, unless it's really necessary, and I leave that judgment to you, not to have your technology out except for when truly necessary. Because that's part of the environment that we create for ourselves. Even when it's not culturally noxious, it can be culturally noxious and it can also be distracting. So I think in general, we need to think about in our lives, the environment that we create, but I ask you very specifically also, to consider in this context of changing your environment. This way you don't really have to change yourself. Changing your environment to really enhance our growth in Torah, in Yerushalayim. Good job.